It's 2:42 on the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Tom Rogers, sitting in for Celeste Quinn. Well, so much has been written about Abraham Lincoln. He himself wrote quite a bit, and we have that body of information to glean from when we try to figure out who the 16th president was. Many Lincoln's writings, particularly his speeches, to poetry. And author Dan Guillory, an East Central Illinois resident, has penned some of that poetry to mirror events in Lincoln's life from just before his arrival in New Salem as a young adult to his assassination and even beyond. Dan Guillory has written a book. The title is The Lincoln Poems. It's a juxtaposition of some of the events in his life, some of the day-to-day things in Lincoln's life as he grew up in the first half of the 19th century. Penned with some of the poetry that Dan Guillory has written. He joins us in the studio to talk about his book. Good afternoon.
Great. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Dan, you're a professor emeritus at Millikan University, so and have written some things. The book, in fact, starts in Decatur.
Yes, well, that's where the Lincoln family arrived in 1830, the spring of 1830, and actually they settled outside of Decatur in what is now Harristown Township.
And for one very cold, very long winter.
Extremely meteorologically significant winter, and the snow was 4 feet deep, and people were dying all over the county. And couldn't be buried. The ground was so hard, it was like rock. And so they would put the bodies in the lofts of barns. That's kind of a strange way to start your stay in Illinois.
And you've taken these highlights, if you could call them highlights, of Lincoln's life and written from Lincoln's perspective,
yes,
I guess.
Try to channel Lincoln?
And one
reviewer actually used that term. There are all kinds of impersonations of Lincoln. And I sometimes describe the book as an impersonation in language, in poetry, as opposed to I'm too small to, you know, impersonate the tall Lincoln. But his voice is something that's very special, and I became enchanted with his voice.
What is your bank of information, both in, you know, trying to find the written history of Lincoln, but also trying to figure out what he was like, what his accent would have sounded like, perhaps?
Well, a little of that we know from eyewitness accounts. We know how Lincoln pronounced the word, a lot of words, like chair, for example, which he pronounced cheer, and education, which he pronounced education. And the problem was that when Lincoln gave what was arguably his best speech before he was elected president, was the Cooper Union Address in February of 1860 in New York City. People first heard that accent. But once he got into the speech, they were utterly moved. One of those people was Horace Greeley, and he went back and wrote a wonderful review of the speech, and Lincoln was launched for the presidency.
How did you use that? Did you hear Lincoln speak when you wrote what you write in the book?
Lots of times, more Lincoln thinking. I read a lot of the letters and certainly the speech too, in particular poems. And in fact, I have a poem about that which he sort of makes fun of his Kentucky yawp.
And that's, you know, a lot of introspection in a lot of these poems as well.
Yeah. I think two things about Lincoln that are misunderstood. One, I think he was our smartest president ever. Put him up there with Woodrow Wilson and Thomas Jefferson and John Kennedy. The other thing is that everyone assumes that since he was highly political and drafted some meticulous documents as a lawyer and so forth, that there wasn't a spiritual and emotional side, very, very deep emotional side to him.
And there was certainly a lyrical side to him.
Absolutely.
You talk about some of his literary inspirations as well.
Right. He loved Robert Burns. He loved Shakespeare. When he was in Washington, he would regularly invite actors over to the White House to talk about how to do scenes in Macbeth and Hamlet, how to do a speech. And he had opinions about all of these things. He was a great lover of language all his life.
Explain a little about how you decided to structure the book. You intersperse your poetry with prose about his life, and that's a literary procedure that has background in Japan, I guess.
Well, there's a certain kind of poem in Japan called a haibun, which starts out with either a story or some kind of contextual statement. I mean, it's a little more technical language here, and if you like, the backstory. It's not an attempt to tell the reader how to read the poem. It's to simply give you information so you'll be on you'll know what's going on when the poem starts.
And you take us through these events in his life, and anything from the mundane, I guess,
right.
You know, living in a
right.
in Springfield where hogs roamed the streets,
right. And they had a different kind of pollution problem then.
Yes, to his romance, his getting to meet Mary Todd Lincoln. And you write on page 52, sort of again interspersing some of the literary background of his
oh, yes.
courtship of Mary Todd Lincoln, and then writing about her from Lincoln's perspective again in poetry.
Right.
If you can read,
yeah, and it's kind of a love hate relationship. I don't know if I'll read it all, but I'll just. My preface this will be that one time Lincoln showed up at the law office and with his law partner Billy Herndon, and he had a big bandage on his nose where Mary had apparently hit him with a piece of stove wood because he would go into these long periods of meditation or whatever. You couldn't shake him loose. So they were evenly matched. I mean, he was gone 6 months of the year on the circuit. She had to raise the boys, and she was highly emotional woman. Brilliant woman, spoke French. Her family knew Henry Clay, was one of the politicians of the day. Mm-hmm. At the same time, her family hated Lincoln because they thought he was a hick.
Of a different class.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so but she believed in him from the get-go and said that she was going to marry the man who would be president. That's an extraordinary thing. Mm-hmm. I'll read a little bit of this. Is
sure.
called Litany for Mary T. Oh, terrible she. Angel fat goddess, my tormenting demon in black toed slippers, my dancing accordion, she of the seven petticoats and the slit open drawers, eyes fierce as a lynx, nakedness all musk and mink. O she of the burning gaze, the upcurled lip, the little finger hooked behind my ear, the hitching post of love. And they had a very passionate relationship. I mean,
Very realistic relationship.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you decide to use this form of meeting historical background of Lincoln with the poetic background?
Well, I think it was partly an accident. The first couple of times I read the poems, I realized that, and this was in Springfield, and certainly people there know a lot about Lincoln, but. There's so much – we know more about Lincoln, I think, than any person who ever lived. And consequently, you can never know too much. I found this out once I got the project. And people needed a little background. And so when the poems were first published, which was in Illinois Times newspaper, some mm-hmm. – not all of them, but some of them were published – the editor had asked if I could provide a little background, and that sort of became part of the package. And by the time I submitted it to the publisher, I asked her, my editor, about it. She says, well, just send me the whole thing. And so basically it evolved. It was really by trial and error.
We never really know too much, I guess, about Abraham. We keep learning new things. And you brought up a few years ago there was controversy in the historical world about Lincoln's sexuality.
Right.
You know, it certainly jolted a lot of people to think about that. But and you write to this, although you are not of the belief that the president Lincoln was gay.
No. I think the main argument for this revolves around the fact that Lincoln shared a bed with a good friend of his, Joshua Speed, in Springfield, and he also shared a bed with lots of other men when he was on the Eighth Circuit Court here in Illinois.
This was going from town to town, hearing cases and having to. Bunk up in homes at
either in homes or taverns or wherever you could find a place to stay for the night. Usually he had a kind of network of people he would stay with and taverns he would stop at. The fact of the matter is if you apply that standard, then probably 90% of the men would come out as homoerotic, you know, because there simply weren't enough beds to go around. And sometimes there wasn't enough heat either. So there were a lot of practical reasons why people slept together. Sometimes in the case of Lincoln's good friend, Judge David Davis, who weighed in at over 300 pounds, he solved the problem by having a bed all to himself. There's a famous story that Davis got in the bed one time and the bed collapsed under him. So no one could use the bed.
But that was a luxury at that point in time, and especially on a – but maybe not so luxurious if it was a cold winter night.
Right.
You write not just from the time he was alive, but also perhaps the night of the assassination,
absolutely,
going through the contents of his pockets.
Absolutely.
Explain, is that difficult to do?
Yes. I mean, those poems, although I have three poems about his death in the book, including the very last one, which is called Alternate Ending, because I have my sense is that I guess if you do this enough, you begin to feel that way. But I could point I feel Lincoln is with us. Absolutely. In fact, I have a book called Living with Lincoln, my very first book. And I would point out that just in the past few days, President-elect Obama has evoked Lincoln's name. And there's a big story that came out, AP story that was published a couple of days ago. It was on the front page of the Decatur paper, for example, basically showing the various linkages between Obama and Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln has become our benchmark, our icon for all things political.
If you could read the alternate ending,
if that's the case,
because it is striking, to have somebody reading about his own funeral.
Lincoln had learned German, and he was planning. He and Mary were planning on going on a trip to Europe, and so that's all in the poem. It wasn't supposed to end this way. Mourners lining the railroad tracks. Miles of black crepe and patriotic bunting. I was supposed to become the regent of Reconstruction or a continental tourist so I could practice my German on sight, even a pilgrim in Jerusalem. Of course, all the while I'd write my memoirs, making obscene profits as a corporation lawyer. Yet here I am, the sentinel of Oak Ridge, watching the comings and goings, savoring the passage of time, which is like snow, redesigning the contours of the land, a soft tattoo like prairie showers on cedar shakes in that other world I once so happily inhabited.
What surprised you in your research about Lincoln for this particular work? And you have studied Lincoln for many, many years. What came out that you may not have expected when you put this work out?
Well, I think I mentioned him being one of our smartest presidents. I think they're really closely linked, his intelligence and his perseverance. As everyone knows, Lincoln did some surveying work. What they don't know is that you need to know trigonometry to be a surveyor. And Lincoln had a third grade education, and he taught himself trigonometry.
And he taught himself a number of other subjects.
Absolutely,
as well.
Many other things. He even helped his – I just found this out recently. He helped his oldest son, Robert, with his Latin homework, even though he didn't know Latin, but he was learning the Latin too. So a capacious, inquisitive, subtle, well-nuanced mind. That's why he was such a great storyteller.
And he loved literature as well.
Yes, absolutely.
What were his –
Well, Shakespeare, I think, would be right up at the top, but Robert Burns, he did not like the novels of the day, so you wouldn't find him reading a novel. But Macbeth and Hamlet were absolutely, and Richard III.
And he quoted scripture a lot, even though he was not – there's nothing in the historical background to say he was quite a very religious person.
The Presbyterians like to claim him because he did buy a church pew for the Lincoln family, but that was in Springfield. But that was out of gratitude to the minister who really counseled Mary when they lost Eddie Lincoln. And she was very, very distraught. And of course, they lost their favorite son, Willie, when they were in the White House. And he did attend a Presbyterian church on Sundays in Washington. But no, he was never a formal member of a church. Lincoln did not believe in the Trinity or the divinity of Jesus Christ. You can't really be a Christian, in the normal sense.
And you're right about that, and the tragedies in his life and the successes and all that in the book.
But he was a very religious man throughout. You're absolutely right about that.
The book is called The Lincoln Poems. Dan Guillory is the author of the book, and it is out from Mayhaven Publishing in Mahomet. And thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.